Our next speaker and the last one before the coffee break, we're going to have a very short coffee break from 10:30 to 10:45, if I can get everybody still on time, is Bill Irvine, who is going to be talking about On Becoming an Insult Pacifist. Bill?
What a lot of people. Thank you for that introduction. And thank all of you for being here today. You realize you're not just at a bigger Stoicon than last year's Stoicon. You're currently the biggest assembly of Stoics in the history of the world. Now, I've been tracking the growth of the Stoic movement, as you might call it, and we've got an exponential growth rate. So I've done the math on this. By the year 2015, we will no longer count as weird. And by the year 2050, we'll dominate the planet. So if you adopt Stoicism now, your great-grandchildren are going to just so much admire you about your wisdom in doing so. So today I'm going to be talking about insults, and they've lately been much in the news. Donald Trump... Okay. Turn it up. Is this better? Okay. Okay. Donald Trump won the Republican nomination on the basis of his ability to insult people. And the New York Times published a list of 258 people, places, and things he had insulted, and this was on Twitter alone. There were all of the verbal insults on top of that. And as a result, this was two summers ago, he was in the news about these insults when it was still a surprising thing. Now it's become expected, when it was a surprising thing. And as a result of that, I was invited onto the MSNBC network as insult expert. Okay? Because I had recently published a book titled A Slap in the Face, Why Insults Hurt and Why They Shouldn't. And so they had me on. Fortunately, it was on Sunday morning, so only like 12 people were probably watching them. And about 8 of those were people I knew and relatives. But I went on, and I very quickly, you know, gave my opinion. I said, these are really low-grade insults. These are witless insults. These are the kinds of insults you would hear on a fourth-grade playground, okay? Now, it was two summers ago. Little did I know that he would get this far, okay? He's like that far away from being president of the United States. Not only am I a practicing Stoic, but I'm a student of Stoic history. And I know that my Stoic predecessors had an unfortunate tendency to find themselves banished to terrible places. Seneca was banished to Corsica. Musonius Rufus was banished to Yaros, a desolate island in the Aegean Sea. And so I started thinking, in coming years, I could get a chance to get personal insight into banishment, that's a conceivable thing. And if given a choice between exile at the Trump International Hotel and Yaros, I will choose Yaros as being more conducive to personal development. The other place insults have made headlines is in America's college campuses. So again, this was a year ago, a year ago in the fall. The news was that these campuses were being overtaken by this epidemic of insulting behavior. And the people issuing the insults weren't simply uncaring people, but they were racist, sexist, or homophobic individuals. But further investigation revealed that the insult outbreak wasn't really kind of as bad as the news was describing it. In the early 1970s, when I went into college, the things that were being called insults wouldn't even be categorized as insults. Okay, sorry. I'm not used to this. I have classrooms in which I simply yell. Okay. So what had happened is that students, modern students, had become exquisitely sensitive to insults. So they were set off by, they regarded as full-scale attacks, things that, again, I wouldn't even call insults. And the other interesting thing is they didn't have that sensitivity, probably, when they arrived on campus. Instead, they were trained to have that sensitivity, an acute sensitivity to insults. And these are termed microaggressions. So you don't see them unless you're trained to see them. And then once you're trained to see them, then you see them everywhere. So when I was in college, calling someone the N-word was an obvious insult, okay? These days, on Clark University, at Clark University in Massachusetts, students are advised not to refer to a mixed group of men and women as you guys, because the fear is that if there are women in the group, they will take that as being excluding them, that they aren't allowed to do whatever you guys are being invited to do. Well, okay, and it's more interesting than that. Students take even the most mundane questions as examples of racism or sexism. So the question, for instance, what are you, is now forbidden or discouraged, even though all you're interested in is what their major is, right? Because they might take it as some sort of probing of their ethnicity. And even worse is, where are you from? Even though you just want to know, are you from Nebraska? It's, where are you from, deeper than that, in some racial kind of way. And there are campuses that have taken an interest in creating what are called safe spaces. And this can mean different things, but in some interpretations, the idea is what they would create is a campus in which people didn't insult other people. So you didn't have any aspects of your race, ethnicity, or anything else challenged. You could be spared that. And as I read those reports, it's an interesting thing. There was a time when if you wanted to be sheltered from the world's crudeness, you'd go to a monastery or a convent. These days, you can just enroll at Yale, and it'll have a similar effect. Now, as I read these reports as a Stoic, I thought, what would Epictetus think? Suppose we could transport Epictetus forward in time, what would he think about this situation? And he would say that it would be wonderful to have a world in which no one insulted anyone else. But that world isn't going to happen, and that's because of human nature. We all are playing this weird kind of social hierarchy game, and it's wired into us by our evolutionary past. And in the book, A Slap in the Face, I describe kind of how we got to that state. It's wired into us, and it's not going to go away anytime soon, so we might as well accept that. Epictetus, and at first, when I was doing my research for A Guide to the Good Life, I was surprised that the Stoics had such an interest in insults. And Epictetus not only had that interest, but gives all sorts of advice on how to deal with insults. So what would make him an expert? Well, he was both lame and a slave. And presumably, as a result, he himself had experienced many insults in life. And he had come up with a strategy for coping with them. And he shares that strategy in his writings. So one of Epictetus's basic insights was that when it comes to the things in the world, there are things we can control and things we can't control. And we're foolish to worry about the things we can't control, because we can't control them, right? When it comes to insults, there's those two aspects. There's the things we can't control. We can't control whether other people are going to direct insults toward us. There are things we can control, and one of those things is how we respond to the insults that are directed toward us. So that's where we should devote our energy, to focus to dealing with insults in a way that prevent them from harming us. And to many modern college students, it would come as an absolute surprise, that advice, you know, that you can control whether an insult does you harm or not, because they've been told that they can't. They've been told that they can't cope on their own with that. So at the University of Missouri, what do you do if somebody insults you? you call the campus police, okay? And Epictetus would say, that is so wrong. Because you can deal with it. You just have to have some basic coping strategies. And he would have said, it's a recipe for a miserable existence. If you think every time someone has insulted you, you have to have someone else step in and save you. You're capable of saving yourself. Now, in writing A Guide to the Good Life, I experienced what I call a telescoping literary pregnancy. And I'm prone to these. It must be some kind of genetic condition. Because what happened when I was writing that book is I knew I had to have a chapter on the insults. And the insult chapter kept getting longer and longer and longer. And then one day I realized, oh, it wants to be a book, okay? And so it became its own book, and I've actually had that happen. A Guide to the Good Life was itself the result of a telescoping literary pregnancy when I was writing the book on desire. Both of those books, by the way, are for sale today. and I started doing research into the Stoics. That chapter kept getting longer and longer and longer, and I realized not only did it want to be a book, but it just made so much more sense to me than Buddhism, which is the thing I was actively exploring at the time, did. Not any put down of Buddhists, if there are any Buddhists in the audience today. It's just that for me in my life, it worked so much better. It was such a better fit. So anyway, that's how Guide to the Good Life happened. So I ended up, after writing Guide to the Good Life, writing a book on insults. And I had imagined that no one on the planet would buy A Guide to the Good Life because it was a book about a dead ancient philosophy, and who would buy that? And I felt so clever selling it to Oxford University Press that I had pulled over a fast one, and I thought the real sales will be in a book about insults. No, it did not work out that way. So anyway, but let me tell you about slap in the face. First of all, book starts out with a catalog of insults. So some insults are very straightforward, like calling someone an idiot. That is an insult. But what's interesting about insults is that they can be much more subtle than that. Like saying to someone, I don't care what anybody says, I don't think you're an idiot, right? Which is insulting, but in a roundabout kind of way. You can insult people not by anything you say, but by what you don't say. For instance, if someone serves you an excellent dinner and you say nothing at all, that can count as an insult. Massimo, that was an excellent dinner you served last night. And insults can be cunning. And so this was the interesting thing. Once you start looking for insults and start thinking about them, so cunning, such as when you tell somebody that you missed them at a party, knowing full well that the reason they weren't at the party is because they weren't invited to the party, right? There is that kind of subtle jockeying that goes on in our social dealings. And I realized, as a result of looking for insults, I discovered my own insulting tendencies, okay? We think we live in a world in which everybody insults us. We never insult anybody back. That simply isn't true. We just aren't aware of our own insults because they don't harm us. We don't feel the pain of them, but other people do. So what I started doing is replaying conversations that I had had, looking for my insulting tendencies, and I found them. So I describe in the book one situation where a student came in and told me that he had been accepted to a graduate school. And I said, oh, that's wonderful. And I said, what school? And he told me. And I replied by saying, well, that's a real bargain as graduate schools go, okay? Now, you can take that as an utterly benign kind of comment, right? But when I thought about, why did I say that? Why did I say that rather than some other thing? And the answer is, I said that as a kind of academic, you know, pride of, well, you know, that's kind of where you go if you don't have the money to go to a real graduate school. And shame on me, and shame on me. And yet it slipped out so easily, and it's only afterwards that you realize. So Donald has taught us about mindfulness, about while you're thinking, or shortly thereafter, think about your thinking. And here's one thing to do. Replay conversations that you've had with other people. As you replay them, look for subtle insults that you didn't even know at the time were insults. Another thing I would advise you to do is look for signs of envy in yourself. Envy is a very powerful emotion, and it's very, very easily disguised. And you experience it. And you can go through life without admitting that you experience it, but look at your conversations, and you'll find it there. Now, let's see. Slap in the face. I go on after cataloging insults to consider the psychology of insults. In some cases, they're benign, so they're completely innocent insults. So guys, typically, if guys are together long enough, what they do is they get bored and they start insulting each other. And it's part of this weird male bonding ritual. And there are some people that when I see them, some good friends, we swap insults. It's just how it works. Within relationships between men and women, same thing can happen. So if your wife calls you piggy, there's a very good chance it's because she loves you, all right? Could be an outright insult, but there's a very good chance that it's just a pet name, and it's part of this bonding that goes on. But of course, there are insults that aren't so benign, okay? And one of the things I discovered is the incredible power. So a stoic is after tranquility. And the interesting thing I discovered was the incredible extent to which insults can disrupt our tranquility. So at one point, I was talking to a much older person who had dementia. And you know, you try to get conversations going, and so one of the things you can do is have conversations about when they were young. Because, you know, if you have somebody with dementia, they don't know what year it is, they don't know who's president, but they can tell you what happened, you know. In 1947, they can tell you that with in great detail. And what was interesting to me is one of the things they could remember vividly is people who had insulted them half a century before. Not only could they remember it, but it was still a fresh wound after half a century. So if what you're interested in is preserving your own tranquility, you need a mechanism for coping with insults. So Stoics thought they had a way of doing that. And it's based on a kind of a mind trick, a psychological insight. And I'm going to share that with you today. The insight is that, number one, you have a choice of what you do to insults. So their number one recommendation with regard to insults is that you become an insult pacifist. So when somebody insults you, what should you do? Nothing. You simply continue the conversation as if nothing had happened. It's doubly effective. It prevents you from being upset by the insult, and it puts them off their strategy. They're out to kind of ruin your day, to interfere with your day. And you don't let that happen. And so I experimented with that. That was the fun thing when I was writing the book, is I got to play with all of this stuff. And it really is effective, right? Because what will happen is sometimes they'll repeat the insult, right? Thinking, surely he didn't hear that I just insulted him. But in fact, then you say, oh, I heard you the first time. And then you just go on talking. The thing about insult pacifism is that anybody can do it. Someone in a coma can be an insult pacifist. In fact, someone in a coma doesn't have any other option, right? So you don't have to be witty. And I'm in a room full of witty people here, so if you absolutely feel you have to say something in response to an insult, say thanks and continue as if nothing had been said. Singularly effective. And if you're more clever than that, what you can do in response to an insult is engage in self-deprecating humor. You can insult yourself even worse than the insulter insulted you. Okay? It takes the wind right out of their sails. So in the book, I describe one case. I had a colleague who was, he came up and announced that he had written some stuff I had written as part of a book he was working on. And, you know, it's the praise, and so, oh, thanks, gee, that's wonderful. And then he lowered the boom. He said, and I'm trying to decide whether in my book I should characterize you as being evil or merely misguided. Okay. Now, to put this into context, we academics, we engage in this kind of jockeying, right? This kind of dominant struggle. And you know, at first I thought, I should actually be angry that he said that, but then the Stoic advice came into my mind. And I replied by saying, well, I don't see why you can't characterize me as being both evil and misguided. Okay? And what was interesting is his reply was that I need to take things more seriously. Okay? That I should allow myself to be upset by insults, and that I wasn't was a sign that I wasn't taking things seriously. Here's the key insight. Here's the psychological insight. This is a theory, so I'm not a psychologist, but here's a theory for you. When someone insults you, you have this 5-second window, psychological window, in which you're either going to decide that you're going to treat this as an insult, or you're going to shrug or laugh it off. And if you decide that you're going to treat it as an insult, you give it entry into your psyche, where half a century later, it might come back to haunt you. If you shrug it off, or if you're capable, laugh it off, you shut the door to your psyche, it will not make entry to your psyche, and you will not live happily ever after, but at least you will have overcome this particular challenge. And you know, you might say, well, that's just a mind trick. Well, yeah, right? But if it works, why not, okay? And realize the Stoics were the consummate psychologists of their time. So a lot of what they had to do would count as a mind trick, negative visualization, a wonderful mind trick. Stoics would add that the mere fact that someone is saying something negative about us, we should not take it as an insult. Sometimes what they say is true, and they're doing a favor by telling us, okay? Your friends tell you what you want to hear, and they enable you. And that's the danger with friends. You need friends, but they will enable you. They'll take the things, your worst traits, and they either won't say anything or they'll encourage it in subtle ways. Your enemies don't play by those rules. Your enemies take great delight. They spend their time looking for your flaws and then pointing them out when they find them, okay? And, but the thing is, you think, well, an enemy is saying this, so I should ignore it, or I should be angry, or I should be upset. But it isn't an insult to begin with. It's the truth. And, you know, if you want to be a better person, if you want to make progress toward virtue, what do you need to do? Number one, you need to look for the mistakes you're making. You need to actively seek them out, because they aren't going to pop out and say, hey, another mistake you're making. You need to be looking for them, and when you find them, you need to develop a strategy for dealing with them. Now, praise is the flip side of insults. So let me tell you a little bit about praise. The Stoics have much less to say about praise and how we should respond to it than they do about insults. But praise is a dangerous thing. So Stoics are going to be tell us to be cautious about any praise that comes our way. There's two reasons for that. First is a lot of praise is insincere. We tell people things that are good about themselves so they'll do stuff for us, right? So they can manipulate us. Second thing is someone's praise might be utterly sincere, but because they have wildly different values than we do, their praise is going to lead us in a direction that will take us away from our own values. And that's dangerous, okay? If what we want to do is stay true to our own values. And so the question is, then, if you're a Stoic, what do you do in response to praise? Well, I got to experiment with this, so I tried things. First, do nothing. Somebody praises you, you just carry on as if nothing had happened. Bad strategy, because it creates in that person the belief that you expect them to praise you, right? That you don't even have to acknowledge it, that it's just an expected thing. So what's the next fallback? So this works pretty well, is you can say thanks and then continue as if nothing happened. And of course you have the kind of idea, the decision to make in your own mind of whether the praise is something that you should take seriously and act upon. If somebody you've chosen as a mentor praises you, good, okay? If it's just a person, then you graciously accept the praise and then try to carry on thereafter. You can also engage in mild forms of self-deprecation. So if someone praises you, wonderful thing to say is, you are very kind. And it's kind of my reflexive thing now, okay? And I know I've just killed all chance of applause at the end of this talk, but there you go. And while we're on the topic of praise, let me talk a little bit about boasting. So why do we boast? We boast about our accomplishments in large part because we want other people to praise us. Praise feels so good, and we want other people to praise us. But a Stoic, a proper Stoic, should not be seeking praise and therefore should not be boastful. A proper Stoic should be very humble, okay? So let me tell you about my own Stoic practice. I feel like this is in context of Julia's claim about practicing Stoicism and can you become the Stoic sage and so on. Well, I've been practicing Stoic for more than a decade. And probably I'm a congenital Stoic, so I leaned that way since birth. But here's just a story for you. So I've discovered recently that my own humility needs work. I feel like in my Stoic practice, I've made great strides in becoming a less insulting individual, right? I've made great progress in responding to other people's insults. I still seem to be a praise junkie. I'm working on that. And my humility needs lots of work, I've decided. So here's the story. I'm a rower. I row competitively. I do master's rowing. And, I think for me, rowing is part of the Stoic practice. Because when you row, what do? One of the key things you do is you battle against the inner you. The inner you is it fears things. The inner you is lazy. The inner you doesn't want to do things where there's a chance of failure. And what you have to do is wrestle with that inner you. And that's part of becoming a better form of you. So I row as a result. Last year, I entered a sprint race in Tennessee. And I was up against 6 other boats in my heat. Highly competitive field. Now, I had not been rowing well. So I kind of had very low expectations for myself. And did the race. Now, in master's rowing, an interesting thing is you get an age handicap. So it's really wonderful to be really old. So you get this huge. And I figure if I'm still rowing when I'm 95, my age handicap will be so big that I'll actually finish races before I start them. That's how big the handicap would be. So, but the bottom line is you can't tell by who crosses the finish line first, who won the race. Because what they have to do is take into account all of the age handicaps. So I knew I had finished, crossed the finish line last. But I'm old. And I thought, well, maybe something will turn up. And then they announced the results. So there's a long pause while they're doing the math. They announce the results. And guess who came in number one? Yes! So what did I do? I ran off to the medals tent, I collected my gold medal, wore my gold medal, showed my fellow rowers my gold medal, was photographed with my old medal, texted pictures of me wearing the gold medal to other people, told people about my race-winning strategy. Those are people who asked. There may be one or two. And I told a whole bunch of people who didn't ask about my race-winning strategy. And then the PA system crackled to life and said that in that race, there had been a timing error. Yeah. And that the athletes should recheck the results. OK, from first place to last place. Oh, yeah. OK. There is only one rational explanation for what had happened, and that is that the Stoic gods had been watching me and had basically said, you know, he's been screwing up lately. His practice has fallen away. So here's the Stoic takeaway. When you do your Stoic practice, you will stumble. You will fall. It's part of the thing. When you think about one part of your practice, the other part will start going downhill. So it's just part of Okay. Part of the way this works. And and the other thing is, in my case, I was a club coach at the time, you know, and I would tell all of my people, you know, it's not about the medals. It's about the battle with the inner you and so on, you know, getting up at the crack of dawn. And here I was obsessing over medals. So I learned a very important lesson here. And the lesson is that if I'm in another race, and I hope to be racing in the future, and I come in first, the very first thing I will do is go to the timing tent and demand a recount. And let me end with a quick comment on what I think America's college campuses, what the cure for this is, and that would be to teach, to have every college student be forced to take a course in Stoicism 101 or some other. Or some other philosophy of life, because it will not only help them deal with insults, but it will help prepare them for the rest of their life. Thank you very much.
You got the applause anyway. One very quick question, yes.
Advice when you go low, I'll go high, meaning what? That you will? Yeah, I mean, but that would simply be the advice of you carry on as if nothing had happened, and the person insulting you, then people say, well, that person is foolish. Doesn't he see that she's unaffected? Isn't that a silly way? So I think what I'm giving you is a variation of that. So you carry on. Hey, we got serious business here. We can swap insults. But this is about the well-being of America and the world.
All right. Thanks very much, Bill.